Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
From AccuWeather, this is Everything Under the Sun. Real news and real stories covering topics from the worlds of science, sports, and space. It's all the information you need to weatherproof your life. And now here's the host of Everything Under the Sun, AccuWeather meteorologist Dean DeVore.
Welcome in, friends. Episode 11 of 2023 in our series of Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com. Getting ready to change the calendar over to April. And that means we are in the heart of spring flooding season. Now, I know a lot of you don't live necessarily next to a flooding tributary like a stream, creek, or river. But those that do certainly have this time of year in mind. And we do have some flooding concerns. California, the upper Midwest, and northern Plains. Not so much in the Northeast this year because of lack of snow. We'll talk to one of our experts at AccuWeather, meteorologist Alex Sosnowski, who's been watching river flooding since he had an experience up close and personal when he was a teenager back home in Northeast Pennsylvania. And we'll also talk about weather history with our friend Evan Myers. Friends, sit back and relax. It's time to talk about everything under the sun from AccuWeather.com. While floods can happen any times, the spring season is primarily susceptible because we have a combination many times of strong weather scenarios and systems that will create the potential for heavy amounts of rain on top of what is, at the time, a lot of melting snow and areas, and that combination can create major problems. Over the last 50 years, floods have generally become larger in streams and rivers across large parts of the Northeast and Midwest, and the magnitude of flooding has generally decreased out west in southern Appalachia, northern Michigan. Meanwhile, large floods have become more frequent across the Northeast, Pacific Northwest, and especially in the northern Great Plains, where we could have some problems here this year. So we wanted to talk about this a little bit because we're getting right into the heart of this spring flooding season with a gentleman who I've known now for about 30 years and my 25 years here at AccuWeather, and even before that. His name is Alex Sosnowski. He's our senior meteorologist. You can read him on AccuWeather.com, and he appears on our network often, and he is a person who really knows this stuff and watches it from year to year and has a great handle on it, and there's a big reason why. We welcome Alex Sosnowski into Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com. One of the things in my 25 years here at AccuWeather that has impressed me is that because of things that have happened in a lot of our past as meteorologists, it kind of gives us a focus to some weather phenomenons that not everybody has a good handle on. And unless you live by a major tributary, the spring flooding season isn't necessarily something that immediately pops into your mind. But those who do live near major tributaries, it's a big part of their life. And Alex Sosnowski came to Penn State a few years before I did. I think, didn't Alex, you get here in the late 70s, early 80s, right?
I graduated in 83.
Right. So you graduated just as I was getting here. So that means during Agnes... Agnes, you were in your early teens, right, there in Northeast Pennsylvania?
Correct.
So I was about six or seven as Agnes came through. I lived down in Lancaster near the Susquehanna, about 6 miles from the Susquehanna. So that was a traumatic experience for me, all the flooding we had. And I know for the folks in Wilkes-Barre in Northeast Pennsylvania, Agnes and its flooding was right. Certainly traumatic.
Life-changing for many people.
Yeah, life-changing, right? And mm-hmm. So to me, I mean, I'm just surmising here, but is that something that kind of got you then into
Being
one of the best? And I'm going to say it.
That was one of the linchpins for me.
So. Yeah, I think you are, in our company, one of the best experts on this because you followed it and looked at it. And it's, you know, there's patterns to it. There's ways to talk about it and forecast it, and every season's different. So as we're coming through now, we're getting into the heart of this season for a lot of folks, especially in the Midwest where all that runoff has to go. And I wanted to talk to you about where we are with that, because it's a whole different situation than we were talking about in some things last year. But, you know, those life-changing situations, don't you find that as we look around at our meteorologists here at AccuWeather, that those are the kinds of things that shape our interests?
Yeah, it's always on our mind for sure. You know, when you're emerging from the winter and going into the spring, it's always in the back of your mind, regardless of how mild mannered the winter might be, and even as lame as the start of the spring might be, you're always thinking about that. And if you live along a river or stream, it's always in the back of your mind. Maybe not first and foremost every year, because every year is different.
Right.
These rivers and streams don't flood every year, but you can kind of handpick out when there's major flood years, other years where there's minor problems, and you could just deal with those pretty easily. But when you have a major flood potential, that's where you got to kind of plan ahead. And we're kind of looking at two areas, I think, this spring where there's a risk of major flooding.
And those areas are?
One is California, because of the tremendous amount of snow that's in the Sierra Nevada. Even a gradual meltdown of that snow, I think, is going to lead to some high water issues for the short-run rivers that come out of the Sierra Nevada. And then they tend to spill out onto the Sacramento River and the San Joaquin River. So there's going to be episodes of high water there that they're going to have to deal with that they haven't seen yet. They've had some heavy rain events to deal with this meltdown.
Right. The snow's still locked up in the mountains now, but we had much lower snow levels with a couple of these storms than we've seen in hundreds of years. So there was actually, we were talking about maybe having two melt situations, the lower elevation melt that would come down sooner. Are we into that out in the West? And then we're still tapping in later on to the higher elevation snow that's locked in?
We've kind of chewed into those lower elevation snows already. I think we've had some higher snow levels after those big events. So we've already kind of chewed into some of that. There's always a risk if you get like a sudden surge of warm air and a big rainstorm. Now we don't see that in the short term, but there's always that risk that something pops up on the horizon out over the Pacific and rolls in. So it's a wild card, but I think even if there's just a mild routine melting, because there's so much snow up there that you're going to have, you know, periodic high water events to deal with that. The other area we're watching, and I know Paul's team is on both of these areas here.
That's Paul Pasalak, our long-range forecast director.
Long-range gang, we call him, yeah. they're looking at this stuff like a hawk, and they're kind of outlining the Red River of the North. There's a Red River that flows between Texas and Oklahoma.
Right.
It's the one we're focusing on here. That river flows from south to north, kind of like the rivers do in Siberia. So what tends to happen there is the headwaters of the river tends to thaw out first, the snow melts first, and then it flows northward into the frozen zones. And then sometimes if all that melts at the same time, you can have big problems. Well, that can kind of happen this year. It doesn't happen every year. And the terrain there is very flat. So when you get water in those farm fields, it tends to lay around for a long time. Now, they've upped the flood mitigation along that river. It tends to protect the major communities. But you got the secondary farmlands, the outlying areas that aren't protected as well. So once that water gets in there, it may take a long time to get out. And I'm kind of getting a little concerned about the northern Mississippi, too.
North of St. Louis?
North of St. Louis, yeah, it's pretty much north of St. Louis. When we talk about the northern Mississippi, that's pretty much where we're talking about, north of where the Illinois River comes in. That I think is another zone. Don't forget now that the Mississippi is still emerging from these ultra low levels that we had.
Yeah, I was going to say this is like stark contrast to last year. Last year, we were worried in the Mississippi River Basin, especially from St. Louis southward, of dramatically low levels that were in our time of need, trying to get out of the pandemic. They weren't allowing the traffic of the barges to go.
And we said that would turn around well ahead of time. It was going to turn around late this winter, which it is. We're above that minimum threshold, so the barge traffic is returning to normal. But it there may be a period here where it goes the other way on the northern part of the Mississippi, at least, I think there's going to at least be moderate flooding north of St. Louis, and there could be some spots where there's some major flooding to deal with. And that's because they've had tremendous amount of snow from the Dakotas to northern Minnesota, northern Michigan this winter. It's well above average.
It looks like one area that's going to get the break this year is because we just did not have a lot of snow, and that's the Northeast. And so
most of the Northeast,
most of the Northeast, far interior parts of New England got hit hard, and there will be some.
There will be some minor secondary river flooding,
right? Especially ice jam flooding as we get out of this winter.
Typical spring stuff, yeah,
but not anything too major. And so,
I don't think so. The Susquehanna, right, or the Delaware, I don't think this year. We just don't have the snowpack. Now, there's always a wild card that we get some kind of stalled front and tremendous rainstorm. And as always along the East Coast, you got to watch the tropical season, too. But that's we're getting ahead of ourselves there. But along the Ohio and the lower Mississippi, the tributaries of the Ohio, you have to watch. There's going to be episodes of high water. We had one of those early this week from the heavy rain that occurred. The tributaries of the Ohio and middle Mississippi, they came up pretty good, and there was incidents of minor and moderate flooding with that. And I think we're going to see that up and down going on moving forward this spring as we continue to get some bouts of heavy rain. You always have to, if you get a stalled system in there or a series of systems back to back to back where you don't have enough separation in between them, that's when you can start to run into more major issues. There's been enough separation that the big rainstorms have been coming like 5 to 7 days apart so that it's able to run off, the river systems absorb it, that they cycle up, they cycle down, and you almost have to start over, although the ground is still kind of wet between each one. So we got to watch that area, too. That's a potential wild card. I think there's going to be episodes of moderate flooding.
We're talking with senior meteorologist Alex Sosnowski. You can see his work just about every day on our AccuWeather.com website. I know you talked about this kind of stuff for the network just within the last week, too. So you can see him on our AccuWeather network, over 30 years of communicating the weather to folks. And I think Alex does have that great sense of seeing things in the future. So, you know, we've been concentrating on the flooding. Anything else from your perspective, Alex, that folks need to think about here as we go headlong into spring? Any other weather kind of situations that you would kind of get people alerted to here over the next couple of weeks?
As we've seen last year, despite the overall low river levels on the Ohio and the Mississippi, you still have these very localized, intense rainfall events.
Mm. More and more of them every year.
That's still always in play.
Right?
You can make the debate about climate change, whatever. I don't want to get into that now. But as you turn up the atmospheric temperature, you increase the potential moisture available, and you increase the chances of those extreme localized events where you can have disastrous flooding. That's still in play just about every season now.
Yeah, we've seen Tennessee, Kentucky, those areas with these, especially when we get into this time of year with the surge of moisture and the severe thunderstorm and the lines of training thunderstorms. These are the times of year when you got all kinds of issues and pressures, and that added onto it can certainly cause some problems. The other thing to me is not only with the flooding that you're talking about in California, but some of the other problems that we're seeing across the country, I think weather and the ability to plant the crops here coming soon and then getting them harvested over the next several months, we're going to see some problems continuing to mount up with inflation being led by problems with being able to grow rightly as easily as we have in some scenarios because of all these problems. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think one of the areas where we're going to have some agricultural issues is going to be in the Dakotas, along the Red River, where we talked about that. In California, I think the flooding may be contained more closely to those rivers as long as the levees hold. I think California is going to bounce back pretty strong. And California's prominence in the vegetable market, the world vegetable market, will take over, and a lot of this other stuff will tend to stabilize across the globe. But I think for the most part, the flooding in the Ohio and lower Mississippi basins there is going to be generally contained moving forward this spring. There's always going to be localized problems, but the farmers are a very resilient bunch, and you'd be surprised how quickly they can bounce back, as long as they get the assistance they need.
You know, as someone who, I think you even more than myself, I mean, flooding is scary. for folks who aren't trained, and even those of us that are trained, because the thing is, there are times where there are so many variables into how much or how high these river stages will go. You know, you underestimate the rainfall by an inch or two in one area, and you might underestimate the amount of flooding in that certain area. Right. And then the scariness of the times when it just keeps rising and you don't know when it's going to stop. I mean, this is one of those things that I think we're getting better information than, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago in terms of monitoring and predicting this. But there's still a lot to learn in river forecasting and stages in that. Do you agree?
Yeah. And we're always getting better new information into these systems that we have. And, you know, they're getting better at doing the levees. But, you know, a levee, anytime you raise the barrier up above the water level, you're at risk for a levee failure. They're not foolproof. They're not 100% guarantee. So my advice is, if you live in a floodplain, if you have a mortgage, if you're in a floodplain, you pretty much have to have flood insurance.
Right.
But if you're one of the few people that are able to buy properties outright, I would strongly recommend getting flood insurance, because I can tell you, back in Wyoming Valley in 1972, there was only a handful of people that actually had flood insurance. So those people had to bear the burden. You lose everything. So you don't want to be in that position.
Nope, you do not. Alex, thank you so much for your hard work on this specific topic and everything else you do for AccuWeather and AccuWeather.com. We appreciate your help today.
My pleasure.
Again, you can catch Alex's work extensively on AccuWeather.com and also our AccuWeather network. And Alex, over his 30 years here, has done some broadcasting too, so you might hear him on one of our radio stations from time to time. We thank Alex. When we come back, we're going to look at the weather and history. We like to talk about where the weather has influenced and even changed historical events. We'll talk about that with Evan Myers coming up next on Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Whether you're at home getting ready for work, packing the kids' lunch, or commuting, listen to AccuWeather Daily. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, and you'll get the top trending weather story of the day every day.
Welcome back to Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com as we roll on here in episode 11. As you know, if you've been listening, we've been getting some frequent visits from our weather and history expert, Evan Myers, and we're going to do that again here as we turn the calendar to April this weekend. We're going to look at an event that happened on April 4th, 1933. Many of you know about the Hindenburg disaster. Did you know that there was another lighter-than-airship disaster that happened even before that? Evan Myers joins me on Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com. Evan, good to have you with us. Let's go back to the early 1930s. And this is, you know,
90 years ago. Good to be with you, Dean, by the way.
It is good.
I love these conversations.
I do, too, especially when we're talking about something like this, because, you know, airships, dirigibles, lighter than airships,
right? Because they were, you know, they floated in the air.
They were prominent in World War, towards the end of World War One,
as observation things and so on. Yeah,
and so and then they became kind of an anomaly in the United States. A lot of promotion using them to do stuff. So, you know, all of us in our collective probably have the Hindenburg disaster in our minds, but that was 1937. This is 4 years before that, with an airship called the Akron. Tell us a little bit about it.
Why don't we go back, though, a little bit farther than that and talk about balloons?
Okay.
Because balloons, as you said, have been lighter than airships for all kinds of things have been used, were used as observation platforms even in the Civil War.
Yes.
So those were just, were hot air balloons. So
right.
They would heat up
go
the air
up and
inside.
Down, basically, and, not a lot of movement laterally.
Well, and also they were allowed to rise because you heated the air inside, and so warmer air
right.
is lighter.
Yes.
It expands, so
yes.
it's lighter than cold air. Cold air goes down more to the surface. It's denser, so that allowed them to rise.
Sure.
But if something went wrong, if the balloons caught on fire, they went down
quickly.
And they went down fast. So these lighter dirigibles used gas.
Okay.
And so that allowed them to control it a little bit more. And then they had propellers on them
right.
Later. And so they were used for long distance flights because the fact is that you couldn't, if you were going to go across the Atlantic Ocean, for example, if you were going to go across the United States, for example, it would have to, if, in an airplane, you'd have to make, well, the Atlantic Ocean, you couldn't stop, but across the U.S., you'd have to stop so many different times. But this allowed you to make long flights. And the Hindenburg—
Because you were using the power of the air in the atmosphere as in addition to—
Well, you had the gas.
Right, right.
And
right.
so you didn't need to refuel and fill it up with
but
gas
I'm also
aviation
saying
fuel.
You were also using the upper-level winds to travel in those situations,
to help steer
too.
You.
Right, right.
Yeah. Absolutely. But you could go— But you could go against the grain
sure.
if you needed to because you did have the propellers.
Gotcha.
So these were used with the sometimes very elaborate— superstructure underneath for all kinds of cabins, almost like a luxury liner.
Like a cruise liner
a
almost,
exactly.
right? Yeah. So.
And so they floated through the air, but because they were filled with gas, they were really there was the potential for lots of trouble. But we kept trying to do it anyway. We
right.
kept trying to use them.
Because it sounds like a good
anyway.
Idea and it looks cool, right?
You right, know? Except that they just kept
problems,
blowing up.
Right.
Yeah, they would catch on fire. And probably the first early one that caused the problem was the one we want to talk about, and that is the Akron airship disaster. And that did occur on April 4th of 1933, and that was a problem. And then ultimately there would be additional ones after that, the USS or the U.S. Shenandoah, and certainly the one— the Hindenburg disaster, Lakehurst, New Jersey, in 1937. That was a German airship.
Mm-hmm.
And there was talk of sabotage because the Nazis controlled Germany by that time. But in a study that was done, it really looked like it was because it had rained there
mm-hmm.
and there were wet wires that went down. And
so it sparked.
It was an electrical charge and so
yeah.
on. That was probably the most likely. But it's ironic. So that's the most famous one. But the Akron, it's interesting, on April 4th, 1933, it broke apart off the coast of New Jersey, and it was actually seen by the crew of a German merchant ship. So the German tie-in,
yeah.
and it sunk into the ocean. The accident left 73 people dead, only three survivors
oh, wow.
from that. And as we just talked about, you know, the days of the lighter than airships continued for a few more years, but really the Hindenburg was kind of the end of it. And then airplanes got larger, bigger. They were able to carry more fuel.
Jets
and
versus propellers.
Well, and yeah. as we got into the beginning of World War II, which followed very shortly after this, the planes were much bigger and could go longer distances. You're right. Jet aircraft, which again is interesting, was pioneered by the Germans, believe it or not, in World War II. They invented jet aircraft, but started to produce them very late in the war, and so they weren't that much of a factor. But that brought on a whole new level of travel, and by the late 1950s, average people were jetting all over the world.
Right. So this happened right over the coast of New Jersey?
It did. It did.
Barnegat Light, New Jersey, right there.
Exactly,
yeah.
right. On the coast of New Jersey, down actually not far from Lakehurst,
right.
where the Hindenburg
right.
disaster.
That's another weird
thing. Well, the interesting thing is that because of the location and the fact that thunderstorms are somewhat more prominent there,
yeah.
and the lightning, the thunderstorms can... And
that's
hit,
not good.
And hit,
that's not good for gas in the air.
No, it's not. It's not good for airplanes,
right.
really, either. So that was an issue there as well.
Here's another interesting irony. This airship was the Akron.
Yes.
Akron, Ohio, home of Goodyear, is now where airships, some of them are housed for the Goodyear blimp.
We called them the blimp, and that's how we started talking about this. The fact is the advertising, how the Goodyear blimp would go here mm-hmm. and there, and certainly that was a big deal back in the 60s. Would the blimp show up over your football stadium?
It's still a big deal. I think people get really excited when the blimp shows up. So.
Well, they're certainly a lot different than airplanes.
It's not
and
a
so
cruise
on.
Liner, and it's no. just basically a large advertising. With all that writing and stuff.
It
Interesting
is.
Stuff. April 4th, 1933, the Akron airship disaster. That'll do it for episode 11. Thanks to our guests, senior meteorologist Alex Sosnowski. Again, you can catch him on AccuWeather.com with all of the information that he writes on all the stories about the weather that impacts you and your life. And thanks again to Evan Myers. He'll be checking in again later this month with some more weather and history tidbits. For all of us at AccuWeather.com, we thank you for listening. Our hundreds of team members are working hard every day to weatherproof your life through our AccuWeather apps on the Android or Apple systems or on our website, AccuWeather.com, where you can get AccuWeather Now, which is a streaming service of our over-the-air network that is apparent and available on cable systems and over-the-air systems and streaming systems all across the nation. We invite you to join us again next week. We'll talk more about where the weather meets your life, weather in the economy, weather in astronomy, weather in gardening, weather in sports. It will all be under the umbrella of everything under the sun. For our executive producers, Ken Prell and Andrew Robb, I'm your host, Dean DeVore. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe to, rate, and review Everything Under the Sun on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And of course, if you have an idea for a future podcast, just email us at AccuWeather.podcast@AccuWeather.com.